We all do. No.
No. You didn't have physiology.
No.
Okay.
No.
Let's see. This Friday. No, wait a minute. This Friday is study day.
Yeah.
That means there's no lab on Thursday either.
Oh, no, they got out.
Lab on Thursday, the lab on Friday.
I saw the lab.
See, I'm on Friday, but I didn't know Thursday.
Well, Mark. Yeah, I mean, in the past, we have actually been available in the room, even though we can't classic. But I haven't actually been able to get back now. Any other news? Your first switch in your mailbox, because you never have time to check your mail, right?
I did.
Okay. You can find your mailbox. Okay. Sarah, what do you go for? Well, we're not done with the connector cake. That's the bad news. And the syllabus says muscle and nerve. Oh, no. Muscle and nerve time. Well, we'll do muscle and nerve tomorrow. Or they can do muscle tomorrow. And since there's no lab this week, we'll have time to catch up. He normally would have had muscle and nerve lab this week, but there is no lab that'll allow me to have time here to make this up. I would like to finish up with connective tissue, do cartilage, and make a big dent in bone here today. We'll never finish bone because it's a much longer section than cartilage is. We don't have much left on connective tissue proper, the so-called soft connective tissue. We were looking at cells. We started out by looking at the extracellular material first, the stuff that neutrophils have to chew their way through. White blood cells have to chew their way through to get at bacteria to kill them when we have an infection. We're going to apply your knowledge of connective tissue next year in pathology as we look at the obstacles that white blood cells face when they leave the bloodstream and start to do their job. You only have to have the drawings up through the day of the lab exam. Drawings only go through the materials that will be on the lab exam for the midterm. So if bone is on the lab exam, then you have to have all your drawings through bone. It doesn't matter what we're doing in here, but you have to be ready for the lab. So I noticed that most everyone has been working on cartilage and bone, so you're considerably ahead of the game. Cells and connective tissue cells. The grandmother of all connective tissue cells is right here, and it's called a fibroblast. And it's found everywhere in all connective tissues except cartilage. It may even be found in bone, but not in cartilage. I can't think of any other place that it's excluded from except one organ. By no fibroblast. What organ is that?
Brain.
Of course, brain. Brain has no connective tissue. But fibroblasts are found almost everywhere. Their functions are to make the surrounding extracellular connective tissue, and there's their morphology. They shift back and forth between a quiet cell, some people call fibrocyte, to an excited cell, loaded now with all the organelles necessary to synthesize all the extracellular materials. You look at the fibroblasts there with their long, thin processes here. They look, the nuclei are about the only thing you can see. So what confusion could you make then if you saw a flat nucleus like that and nothing else? simple squamous epithelium, yeah. An easy confusion, isn't it? Why would this not be a simple squamous epithelial cell? No white space, no outside world, no bloodstream. Okay, in macrophages, undifferentiated mesenchymal cells, we had a slide earlier that showed the mesenchymal cell and all of its possible offspring. Well, that wasn't a total list of all of its offspring, but one of the slides previously showed a picture of that. We still have some of these cells in our body. We'll be locating some of them when we start talking about bone, and we'll be identifying some specific ones when we start talking about blood vessels. But for now, just be aware that they are stem cells that we have available to us. Macrophages, we've been spending 2 days talking about in pathology class, too. That's 4 hours worth of macrophages. We're going to spend a lot of time later on. The origin of most macrophages is a blood cell. A white blood cell made in bone marrow that is one of the largest white blood cells in our blood, and it's called a monocyte. Got a bean-shaped nucleus much of the time, and pale cytoplasm. And it leaves the bloodstream when needed to become a killer cell. And of course, the cell is going to be loaded with lots of lysosomes, indicated by the green arrow there. It functions to phagocytose bacteria and dead cells and cancer cells. A person had a heart attack, macrophages are going to eat up the dead cells. A person has an infection in the skin, macrophages go there to kill the bacteria. They are found wherever inflammation occurs. The caterpillar stage. This is the caterpillar, and that's the butterfly. Or this is Dr. Jekyll, and that's Mr. Hyde. In other words, there's a metamorphosis. As soon as that monocyte leaves the bloodstream, it metamorphosizes into this particular cell. So, most of the time, they're concentrated only in the tissue space where an inflammatory reaction is going on. There are a few of them naturally there that we call resident macrophages that are hanging around, kind of watching the tissue space like our National Guard here in the United States. So we have a few of those. Their morphology is angry-looking morphology. They have, when they're active anyway, the macrophage has these processes that are kind of flowing out to surround the environment and to sample and possibly kill whatever is deemed alien. And these big old vacuoles there are designed to contain bacteria and other cell particles, dead cells. We looked at fat cells in a scanning electron microscope. I wish we had enough scanning pictures to correlate with histology, because it makes it so nice to go from this slide picture to that one. This is what you see in lab. And this is what the surface of the cell looks like with a scanning electron microscope. Reticular fibers. Reticular fibers help hold the fat cells together. The nucleus oftentimes is pressed way over on the edge. Some of these nuclei, however, are fibroblast nuclei. Some of these nuclei are nuclei of small blood vessels right there. But many of them, and it's hard to tell. That's probably a fibroblast nucleus there. That's probably a nucleus of a fat cell. But we're not going to know for sure by light microscopy. Again, these are the cells full of fat. Why don't you see the fat? It's washed out by the preparation. Yeah. Take one last look there. There's some little offspring here for me. Anyway, let's move on to some other cells. Mast cell, we're talking about that now in pathology as well, because mast cells are the cells that oftentimes initiate an inflammatory reaction. You got a blackberry thorn in your skin and inflammation occurs. Well, mast cells initiate the inflammatory reaction in that case, not in all cases. And they do that by releasing various substances that stimulate white blood cells to leave the bloodstream and attack whatever foreign object, be bacteria or a blackberry thorn, wood splinter, something like that. Mast cells release histamine and other substances which cause the blood vessel to open up and become porous. Got little holes there for the blood cells to, white blood cells to crawl through and start doing their work. Mast cells are not found in the blood. They're in the tissue space and they're ready to respond to a specific types of signals which then release a material to open up the bloodstream, open up the blood vessels. Their function, of course, is primarily under normal circumstances to make sure that we have an adequate inflammatory response. However, anybody know what they're involved with in terms of abnormal behavior? Allergies. They are primarily responsible for most of our inflammatory reactions to allergens, whether it be dust mites or dog dander or cedar trees or food. And we're going to look at a slide coming up here which illustrates how they're involved in this. They are usually distributed, as we see right here, along the surface of blood vessels. They hang out very close to blood vessels because that's where they work. That's where they do their thing. We'll get back to mast cells next year. Their morphology is one where the cells are so filled with tiny little granules, in this case they look red, tiny little lumps of histamine and other chemicals that you can't hardly see the nucleus. Yeah, you're looking at the whole cell here and the nucleus is right there. However, there are so many dark granules, I don't even see the nucleus there. There are so many dark granules that it's tough to see them. In the old days, we asked you to look for these in connective tissue preparations, but we don't do that anymore. All right. Their products, of course, are products that are released during inflammation and during allergic reactions, and we'll look at a picture of that in a second. Plasma cells are the principal cells that make antibodies for us. They manufacture products of arachidonic acid and store those. Most of the ingredients, except for one, heparin, they make and store heparin. Most of the substances, except heparin, are directly related to inflammatory response. Plasma cells, however, are part of our immune system. And they're shown over here. It's a cell with the nucleus sticking off on one edge and then all kinds of cytoplasm next to it. So the cells look egg-shaped, sort of, in their longest extent, look egg-shaped with the nucleus off to one side. I got some more pictures of that in a second. These cells arise Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde transformation, like the caterpillar butterfly thing. These cells arise from a very small cell in the bloodstream called a lymphocyte, like a B lymphocyte. And these B lymphocytes don't look very striking. They have mostly a nucleus with a little tiny layer of cytoplasm. So a lymphocyte looks like a floating nucleus that's got a thin rim of cytoplasm. And that cell in the bloodstream can convert to its other alter ego. The other alter ego is a cell that has chromatin, oftentimes described as a cartwheel, because the chromatin seems to radiate outward and their densities along the surface. But you can only see that cartwheel appearance to a plasma cell if you get the right cut. Other times when there's a slice through it, it may look like the black and white pattern of a soccer ball, black and white modeling pattern of a soccer ball. So some people call it the soccer ball cell. I oftentimes call it the cartwheel cell, and all that's related to the appearance of the nucleus. Got a lot of rough ER, so you're going to see a lot of hematoxylin staining. Lots of rough ER there, which produces intense staining. Rough ER is basophilic. It stains hematoxylin. The Golgi apparatus, it doesn't stain, so it produces a white shadow next to the nucleus, a very, very pale shadow where the Golgi apparatus is concentrated. Lymphocyte doesn't show any of that. Lymphocyte seems to be this free-floating nucleus, and it converts, doesn't have to divide, it just transforms like a caterpillar to a butterfly. Function is to make antibodies pretty exclusively, and the morphology we've just looked at. Here's some more mast cells. In this case, we can see the nucleus, but the cytoplasm is engorged with little vesicles containing inflammatory mediators, including histamine. There's some more mast cells. Here's the electron microscopic image of the mast cell. There's a nucleus. Those granules are what we're talking about here that look dark blue to purple in light microscopy. The mast cell responds to allergens, and we'll call them antigens for the time being. And whether that be dust mite feces or some plant allergy or whatever the allergen might be, it's going to bind to an antibody that has come to coat the mast cell. And we're not going to get into these details much until another time, but just to be aware of its function, the allergens stick to two antibodies that are side by side and link them together. And when these two IgE molecules in blue here are bonded by that allergenic substance, then it sends a signal. And this is biochemistry now, sends a signal through the cell, and then the cell releases things like histamine and heparin and a whole bunch of other things that we're not going to discuss. Point being that the cell has a means of recognizing an allergenic substance and then spitting out some inflammatory mediator. So the person develops hives, maybe, or a rash, or a respiratory problem, or in a worst case scenario, this is exactly the same reaction that causes death in anaphylactic shock. So it could range from simple little hives to entirely fatal condition, and the mechanism is exactly the same. And it's a matter of degree. How many mast cells respond? How much histamine is released? plasma cells frequently are found near our gut epithelium. And here's a big old mast cell there. There's one right there. I have some better pictures. Mast cells are oftentimes best seen in the connective tissue. It's connective tissue cell. Best seen close to our epithelium or our small intestine, right here. And you'll see that later on when we get to that section after the midterm. Here's a much higher magnification of a plastic section. The arrow is pointing at the region of the Golgi apparatus that makes that cell stand out. The nuclear pattern doesn't look much like a cartwheel here, but it has dark and light patterns, and it reminds some people of a soccer ball with the black and white patch. There's almost a cartwheel there with a little dot in the center. We're gonna actually look for plasma cells when we get after the midterm, when we get to the intestine. What do you think plasma cells might be doing here next to the epithelium of our small intestine? Responding to allergens. Yeah. Responding to any kind of allergen. Maybe it's food, maybe it's bugs. Any kind of allergen. And here's a drawing of the nucleus showing the cartwheel nucleus, the Golgi apparatus, and the rough ER. We looked at this slide a week ago where we were preparing for lab, and we wanted to look at the various types of connective tissue that you encounter. And you've already done this now. You've encountered loose connective tissue. I don't think you had a slide of mesenchyme, but you did have a slide of areolar connective tissue. And I know you looked at adipose tissue on a slide. You only have to look at that once, right? And then put it aside because it's unforgettable. Just a bunch of empty rings, you know. And you know where fat is. It's almost everywhere. When people refer to other people as fatheads, they're entirely wrong. There's no fat in the brain. There's no adipose tissue. There's plenty of fat, like this way. There's no adipose tissue in the brain. So calling somebody a fathead is ridiculous. Most of the fat you look at is yellow fat. And that's the fat cells we saw back here. These cells. They are yellow or white fat. I call it yellow because that's what you're going to encounter in the cadaver when you start dissecting through the fat. You'll see the yellow fat. Hibernating animals and young babies, and even you and I, but hibernating animals store up energy for a long winter in a different kind of fat called brown fat. Babies are born with brown fat because there's a high energy concentration in it. And hibernating animals use it to access calories throughout the winter. In brown fat, I don't have a picture of it, the fat cell doesn't have a single drop, it doesn't have a single droplet of fat, like the ones we looked at, but there's multiple little droplets throughout the fat cell. And it, in fact, has a brown color to it. It looks yellow. Reticular tissue you see in the lab is distributed in every organ except brain. Every organ except brain. But you looked at it in those organs that have a lot of it, like lymph node and spleen. In immune organs. Immune organs have a significant amount of it, but it holds fat cells together. It's found in every other organ, stomach, esophagus, spleen, muscle. And you looked at the morphology in lab, and we'll look at it once again. So here's the connective tissue proper. It's in this set of PowerPoint slides. And our too many variations to that. I think I would have put, actually we did, we put adipose tissue up there too, under the soft connective tissue. And actually in the outline we placed the adipose tissue under loose connective tissue. There. Hopeless Tissue is a little different because it's got more cells than it has connective tissue. And that's not a feature of connective tissue. Connective tissue has very few cells and a lot of extracellular stuff. Adipose tissue is a little different. We're going to talk about cartilage and bone today, cartilage mainly. So just to review what you saw in lab, loose connective tissue has very fine, delicate fibers and a lot of nuclei, a lot of cells there. Higher density of cells is a characteristic that you can rely on when you're trying to make an ID on the midterm lab exam. High number of cells indicated by the nuclei. Dense, you looked at in lab as regular and irregular, pretty simple concept. Here's the dense regular. Unfortunately, the slides seemingly aren't stained like you'd like them to be stained, but you did see some fibers, I remember. The nuclei fell out, so you didn't see the nuclei, but the nuclei of the fibroblasts are lined up along the sides, and you'll see that the most common location for dense regular is tendon, the end of muscle. Why are the fibers all lined up parallel?
The
tension to transmit the force in a specific direction. The force is being transmitted in this direction, that direction, and not in this direction. So we want the force of the biceps contraction to reach the radius muscle, the radius bone, and the collagen fibers run directly in parallel to that. Comparing loose connective tissue here, see all those nuclei? Highly cellular, fibers not very apparent. Compare that with dense irregular connective tissue. Fibers are big and husky and fat and run in all different directions. Especially useful property in the dermis of the skin, where we want to have strength in all different directions, all different planes. What type of collagen is in these big, pink, husky collagen fibers that you see in the lab? You have a 25% chance of getting it right because there's four types. No. What is it? One. Type one. Where's type two found? Cartilage. Where's type three found? Reticular fibers. Where's type four collagen found? Basement membrane. Basement membrane collagen doesn't form fibrils. And so loose connective tissue, again, the fibers, collagen fibers, again, is type 1, or it could be type 3, but you haven't stained it, have you, for type 3, so you don't know. There are collagen types, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 collagen types. Everything you see that's pink in the histology lab is type 1. Majority of collagen that is in our body is type 1. Type 2 is collagen and cartilage. Type 3 makes reticular fibers. Type 4 is found in basement membranes. And you'll find that in your notes, even though we're summarizing here. It's in your notes. What makes dense dense? What makes loose loose? Dense is a pretty easy concept here. The collagen fibrils are densely packed to make hugely thick, strong fibers. Look at the size of these fibers here. That big baby there. Look at these things. Giants compared to these little threads in here. Now, what you don't see is the obvious cell count difference. It looks, on this slide, like there's just as many cells over here as there is over here. And that, in reality, that's not the case. The loose connective tissue has far more cells than dense. Dense refers to the size of the collagen fibers and the density of the fibrils that make up these fibers. I'd like to have you read the textbook on the mononuclear phagocyte system. A common synonym for that is macrophage. Where in the body do we have macrophages? And throughout the rest of this quarter, we'll be pointing them out. When we get to an organ that specifically has resident macrophages that are there all the time, those macrophages that are not resident are constantly floating around the bloodstream as a very dignified-looking cell. It's not angry, but little do we know that when that monocyte leaves the bloodstream, it becomes a natural-born killer. These cells don't look at all like the macrophages, but when inflammation occurs, they transform. Resident macrophages are always present in the tissue state, not many of them. And they're generally very long-lived compared to the monocyte. In fact, unlike the monocyte, those cells can divide by mitosis. That's a rarity. The other macrophages that are found in an inflammatory reaction come from blood, and they are unable to divide and reproduce. Reticular cells in lymphoid organs, some of the cells in the spleen and lymph node are in fact macrophages, and this is an old name for them because they're associated with reticular fibers. We'll just learn them as macrophages and lymphoid organs. In the old days, they were called reticular cells. The other important preparation here in histology for immunology is to realize that macrophages play an important role in our immune system, because these resident macrophages are the first cells to encounter bacteria that have entered your body for the first time. Person may have multiple strep infections, but at some point in their life, they had to get the original first strep infection. And these macrophages will eat up the bacteria, the resident ones, and they will munch away on that bacteria, kind of salty, like that bacteria munch there, and then they will process it and hand it over to our lymphocytes and say, go to it. Immune system take off, and they're called antigen-presenting cells. And who are they presenting the antigens to? The lymphocytes, so they can transform into plasma cells and produce a whole bunch of poisons. Well, not really poison, but more like barbecue sauce, which may be a poison anyway. Langerhans cells, I'll have you look that one up. Okay, we're done. Let's go to part two. Everybody has finished his lab already. That's the good news for today. The good news when you were looking at it is we haven't covered much yet. We had a chance to work on it in the lab. If there's any questions that came up when you were working on this in the lab, now's the time. Now's the time to ask, and we'll try to clarify that. Remember what you encountered in the lab was three different types of cartilage. And so let's work on it. Like connective tissue, like the soft connective tissue, like the loose and the dense and the reticular and all those others we looked at, connective tissue, and including cartilage, has cells, fibers, and ground substance. We can't say that for epithelium, can we? We don't see any fibers in an epithelium. We don't see much ground substance in an epithelium. There's a little bit in the cell. But connective tissue is the only tissue that has quite a few of all of those things. Cartilage has cells, fibers, and ground substance. And here are the three types that you saw. And I imagine you got a headache trying to find a good example of fibrocartilage. It's not easy, even with the best preparations. And that preparation in lab is pretty good. But it's hard, isn't it? It's not an easy one, but a pile in elastic should be a piece of cake. What kind of cells will we find in cartilage? Well, the main cells in cartilage are chondrocytes. They are a dime a dozen. They're everywhere. Deep inside the cartilage matrix. chondroblasts. Ooh, they're tougher to see. We're not going to ask you to find them, really. I think we might have mentioned them in the lab guide. They're generally found on the surface of the cartilage. And they generally get so excited making matrix because they're having a blast. They get so excited making matrix that they surround themselves with matrix, and then we change the name. When that cell makes all this extracellular stuff up here, fiber and groundstone, it completely surrounds itself, the cell, the chondroblast. And now it becomes trapped in a space. What was that space called? A lacuna. Trapped in this lacuna, and now we change its name. Chondrocyte. Trapped in a little cell of its own making. A lacuna. There are some stem cells also on the surface of cartilage, stem cells, but we're not going to have any preparations where you'll get a chance to see them. So when we were babies, when we were a fetus, and then a baby, how does cartilage grow in size? You didn't encounter that question in lab, I don't think. But a piece of cartilage, wherever it is in your body, it starts out as small and then gets bigger. Well, there's two kinds of growth. There's growth from the outside surface. The appositional means on the outside. Cartilage can also grow from the inside. And that kind of reminds me of the way an apple grows. An apple grows from the inside where the seeds are. But cartilage does that. Cartilage also grows by laying down new cartilage on the outside. We call it appositional and interstitial growth. What's the most dramatic thing that you learned about cartilage in lab? What's the most earth-shattering observation that you made about cartilage, and the little light goes off and you say, holy smokes. What do you see that is so important to any kind of medicine practice? No what? No blood vessels. Absolutely incredible, isn't it? No blood vessels in cartilage. What does that mean to you? What happens when cartilage gets injured and cartilage gets damaged? Would you rather have bone damage or cartilage damage? Why bone? It's got blood vessels in it. It's going to heal. Cartilage isn't going to heal. That's outstanding, isn't it? That's totally remarkable. You saw no blood vessels in cartilage, and it's described as being avascular. Avascular. Now, you may not have noticed that, but that's what I like you to do whenever you encounter any tissue. What do you see that's so dramatic about that you will wake up in the middle of the night and say, hallelujah? That's going to happen. But, you know, it's something that will help you remember each of these tissues. And cartilage looks funny, but most importantly, it doesn't have any blood vessels in it. How does it look to the naked eye? Let's say that you find a bone on the street corner, and it just came from some living being. And you pick it up and hold it, and you look at the end of that bone, and all the muscles have somehow disappeared. You're looking at the ends of the bone. You're looking at the hyaline cartilage that is found near the joint, that's part of the joint. What does it look like? What's the word? Shiny. Yes. Hyaline means shiny. Hyaline, and it's hyaline. It's shiny. Hyaline cartilage means shiny cartilage. And kind of a cream color. Good. Oh, I forgot my bones. I'll just bring that here. How about the bones in the bone boxes? Do you have bone boxes in gross anatomy? No, you don't have those. But do you see old bones sitting around, like on a skeleton? Any cartilage there?
No.
Why why is there no cartilage on these real bone skeletons that you've encountered in rooms and in the laboratory? There's bone, is that femurs there? And what about those ones? So why is there no cartilage there? Because the bone is what?
Calcified.
The bone is ossified. Is cartilage ossified? No. What does that mean? No mineral in cartilage. When you're looking at the bone hanging there on the skeleton, what are you looking at? Really, what are you looking at? You're looking at mineral. You're looking at calcium phosphate crystal. When you're looking at that bone hanging on the skeleton, is there any living cells or any kind of cells or organic material in it? No, it's all bone. Why is there no hyaline cartilage there? Because cartilage has no mineral in it. Another hallelujah chorus. Hallelujah. No mineral in cartilage. No blood vessel in cartilage. So when you look at the bone, you're not going to see it unless it's fresh bone. What is the structure of chondrocytes at the light microscopic level? Ooh, they look awful, don't they? You kind of want to see this beautiful cell, and we'll show you some beautiful chondrocytes. But all you see is this tattered and torn glop in the middle of the lacuna, I think. Boy, that just looks like trash. And it is trash because it hasn't withstood the preparation method used. So you can sometimes see the lacuna because the cell has even fallen out. So they look horrible inside the lacuna because they're not preserved. What are the functions of the cells? To make more cartilage. To maintain the viability of the existing matrix. Maintain the viability of the existing matrix and to make more cartilage when necessary. How do chondrocytes survive in these lacuna? You saw the lacuna. You saw the piece of cartilage. And this piece of cartilage on a slide may have been big. I'm exaggerating it. But let's say there's a chondrocyte deep down in a lacuna. Way in the middle of that piece of cartilage. How does it survive?
Diffusion.
Nope, that's a good, very good answer. The only problem is she's wrong. That's exactly what you need to do. You need to think about the possibilities, and that was a good possibility.
What was
There's
that?
No canaliculi. She said canaliculi. There's no canaliculi in cartilage. But that's an excellent. No canaliculi in cartilage. And there isn't bone. So how does that chondrocyte get food then?
Diffusion.
If there's no canaliculi.
Diffusion.
Yes. Diffusion through the and how can cartilage diffuse so well? Because
ground.
Because the water.
Because of all the water that's bound and forms a shock absorber. All kinds of water in cartilage, so it does diffuse pretty well, but there's no canaliculi. I'm glad you brought that up, because I would have forgotten. Well, that's okay. And just pretend it wasn't you.
Okay.
But it's important. But I would have never thought of that. That's good. Thanks for bringing it up. Anyway, here's some cartilage. Notice no blood vessels, just a solid sea of cells and matrix. Again, that's second adipose tissue and the ease of recognition. Really easy to identify because there's no reversion canals, there's no canaliculi, there's no blood vessels, there's just this sea of cells surrounded by homogeneous matrix. It doesn't get any easier than that. Except there's some bone that may be confusing sometimes. These cartilage cells have all kind of deteriorated in the lacuna, so the white space is the lacuna, and the cells, they're pretty much deteriorated. There's some up here that look a little bit better, but by and large, they almost look like fat cells. Because there's actually a lot of lipid in chondrocytes.
Can you repeat that again?
Yeah, the cells have all fallen out. You see the shriveled up trash here of the chondrocyte. And a lot of the cytoplasm is moth-eaten and has fallen out. And so you're looking at the lacuna, but you don't see too much cell. Up here there's a little bit more cell. There's a nucleus there. And this dark is not nucleus. That's just the degenerating cell that has kind of flopped over on the edge there. I'll show you some better ones. These aren't too bad. But that's not good. Here's some better ones. Actually, because they've been preserved in plastic. And so now you can see, even then, the cytoplasm is not very prominent. The nuclei are pretty nice looking. There's just not a lot of... here it's kind of deteriorated and cracked right there. Hard to preserve them. Chondroblasts are down here, on the out near the outside surface. These are flattened cells. These are fibroblasts out here. And the area of the fibroblast area on the outside surface of the cartilage, the area where the fibroblasts are, what's that region called? Starts with the letter P. Perichondrium. Here's a pink fiber here. And there's a fibroblast. And here's a chondroblast. And there's stem cells in here, too. There's a pink fiber. Tell me what that pink fiber is. Collagen 1, 2, 3, 4. 1. What's the collagen in here? No. 2. The 1 in there. There's 2 and 7 and 12 and no 1. Collagen type 2. If there was 1 in there, then we'd have fibrocartilage. Fibrocartilage is different because in fibrocartilage we have type 1 in the matrix along with 2. So perichondrium's on the outside surface. How about at the ends of my femur? Got this pearly, shiny hyaline cartilage. That cartilage has no perichondrium. No surface layer containing fibroblasts or collagen fibers. That's a good thing, because I don't want those itchy, scratchy collagen fibers irritating me when I move my joint. I want a nice, smooth, shiny, collagen fiber-free surface. Perichondrium is not allowed in synovial joints. This is a better example of a common sort of appearance. The lacuna is really the lacuna here because the cell has fallen apart. There's a little cytoplasm here, a little nucleus there. This is pure white here because the cytoplasm is disintegrated. This is a bubble there, and it's hard to tell what there. This is totally shot there. Nucleus is all that's left there, and a little tattered cytoplasm. These aren't capillaries. These aren't blood vessels. Okay. Summary then. Hyaline cartilage. Yes. Chondrocytes are these bulging fat babies that look like little orphan annii. Little orphan annii kind of peering at you. Chondroblasts are these flattened babies right down here, like somebody sat on them. And they look a lot like fibroblasts. You will not have to find them. Chondroblasts are at the edge of the perichondrium. So, to summarize things that you may not have encountered in lab, just to summarize hyaline cartilage. No fibers. No fibers. I don't see any fibers. I saw some fibers here, though. But that's in the perichondrium. This isn't cartilage, by the way. That's perichondrium, which means around the outside of the chondrium. Around the outside of the cartilage. It's not cartilage. Perichondrium. And there are some collagen fibers there, but there's none in here. It's all, well, it looks like it there, but that's wrinkles. No collagen fibers. Is there collagen? Yes. But the fibrils don't line up side by side to make fiber. Plenty of five rills. You see it with the electron microscope. And these fibrils contain type 2 collagen, which is obviously different than type 1. And we have some very, very important ground substance that makes cartilage act like a shock absorber. It's a lot of water bound to the proteoglycan aggregates. Review that from our study of general connective tissue. What's the difference in structure between a proteoglycan and an aggregate? Remember the difference? Proteoglycan was a single bottle brush. You know, one bottle brush, one wire, and a little thread. Proteoglycan aggregate cartilage is literally hundreds and thousands of those little bottle brushes linked together by hyaluronic acid. So the term is very, very descriptive, isn't it? What does an aggregate mean? It means more than one. More than one what? More than one proteoglycan. Proteoglycans have many, many functions. They keep chondrocytes away from one another. Maybe they don't like each other. But also, there's a lot of water.
Are they connected to
proteoglycans? By a hyaluronic acid, sure. So you got a... is one aggregate connected to the other aggregate, might be the question.
You know,
proteoglycans. Yeah, the proteoglycans, sure. There's a... proteoglycan here, proteoglycan here, bottle brush, proteoglycan here, proteoglycan here, and here's the connector. And that connector is a substance? Hyaluronic acid. The reason why you, if you're working for a natural products vendor, the reason why you might encourage that there is the reason you might encourage a person to take glucosamine by the bottle. Well, glucosamine is a substrate for hyaluronic acid, and it's useful to maintain the viability of cartilage. If you prescribe glucosamine, it's probably rewarding to know why you're prescribing it. Why you're prescribing this right here. Hyaluronic cartilage is made from glucosamine and other stuff, and it maintains healthy proteoglycan aggregates, so you can maintain the protective function of hyaluronic cartilage. Territorial matrix is the matrix very close to the surface of the lacuna, where it stains a little darker. And the matrix there around the lacuna, where it stains a little darker, has slightly different proportions of proteoglycans and collagen, making the stain darker. So there isn't really much advantage to know that fact, but it's shown up in laboratory atlases. This is maybe okay. It's in Ross, page 185. What's an isogenous group? Well, it's multiple chondrocytes living in the same apartment. I have a renter designed for one. I have a house designed for one renter. And lo and behold, I find four people living in the house. And I call them an isogenous group. Nothing wrong with you, critters. There's more than one chondrocyte in this lacuna. Here's also an isogenous group, but it's just two. This is a very common occurrence in cartilage, to find these eyes, horn-rimmed glasses, and eyes peering up at you from the cartilage. These are collagen fibrils. They don't form fibers because in order to form a fiber, all of these fibrils have to line up side by side, and they don't in cartilage. And therefore, you cannot develop a critical mass of collagen fibrils to form a fiber. Type 2 collagen fibrils. There's a monomer, and the little string is the hyaluronic acid, and one of these is an aggregate. Here's another aggregate. Here's a third aggregate. And cartilage is the only connective tissue that has these huge, giant proteoglycan molecules. Electron microscopy should look a much nicer looking chondrocyte. It's got a lot of rough DR, because it's making and maintaining new matrix all the time. Collagen fibrils are these little threads, and they are really running in many different directions and never forming a fiber. Apparently, the proteoglycan aggregates help to orient the collagen fibrils. And actually, they're synthesized first, and then the collagen comes around later. So there's a very specific structural relationship between proteoglycan aggregates and type 2 collagen that helps to organize the strength of the cartilage. Is perichondrium found in all hyaline cartilage? No. What cells make up perichondrium? Fibroblasts, and maybe on the edge, chondroblasts, and the zinc cells. What is perichondrium then? Well, you've seen it. Look for it, anyway. If you saw it. How would you classify perichondrium as a tissue when it's got fibroblasts, and it's got big, heavy collagen fibers running in different directions? It's not loose, is it? It's dense something. Dense irregular connective tissue. Perichondrium is dense, irregular connective tissue. And obviously there's no perichondrium on the hyaline cartilage in our joints. Are any collagen fibers in perichondrium? Sure, because it's dense, irregular connective tissue with type 1 fiber. How does hyaline cartilage receive its nutrition if it doesn't have any blood vessels? Well, by diffusion, of course. What happens when the cartilage becomes calcified? Anybody know? What happens when it becomes mineralized? Happens sometimes.
It turns into bone.
Where in the human body is hyaline cartilage found? Well, a lot of places. At the ends of my ribs. The ribs attached to the sternum, on the ends of the long bones, my nose, got a lot of cartilage there, moves around, and a whole bunch of other places as well. Cartilage in your voice box, for example. Yes, actually the reason why it calcifies is that blood vessels grow in the cartilage. So the first step is the vascularization of the cartilage. The cartilage doesn't like that now, and it converts to bone. So the blood vessels invade first, and then calcification occurs, and then it becomes bone. So here's perichondrium again, dense connective tissue. Here's a region of the chondroblast layer. Down here is the matrix containing no fiber. This is a drawing which is trying to show that there is collagen there, but these are not fibers. These are collagen fibrils. Here's a couple of chondrocytes living in the same room. Here's one chondrocyte living in the lacuna. Territorial matrix is the matrix immediately around the lacuna. And in H&E preparations, it's a darker stain because of different ratios of proteoglycan and collagen. Chondroblasts are next to the cartilage, and out here are fibroblasts in the perichondrium. Elastic cartilage, how does it differ? Elastic cartilage has what in it that you saw? Elastic fibers. Would an H&E stain show elastic fibers and elastic cartilage? No, it would not. What do you need then?
Silver.
A special stain, just like particular fibers. You need a special stain. This would not show up. These black threads would not show up in an H&E preparation. And you might mistake it then for hyaline cartilage because the chondrocytes and the lacuna are the same. And there's a perichondrium, too. What components are different? Well, what's different is the presence of elastic fibers. What are the obvious properties, then? If elastic cartilage has elastic fibers in it, flexibility, huh? No, right here, flexible. There. And the epiglottis? When you swallow, the epiglottis prevents food from going into your trachea. So that epiglottis has got to be really flexible, and so it's going to be made of elastic, aren't they? Flexibility. Epiglottis is one, your ear cartilage. Yeah.
So the tip of your ear is elastic?
There's some elastic and there's some hyaline bone. Where else? Your eustachian tube. Your eustachian tube has elastic cartilage. It has to move around a lot when you swallow. And when you try to pop your ears in the airplane, you know, you chew gum or blow like this so that the eustachian tube opens up and air passes through. Fibrocartilage. What special fibers are found in fibrocartilage? And you can just barely see it here. Actually, your slides are better than this one in the lab. What fibers do you find that makes this word fibro in cartilage? Is it particular fibers?
Collagen
fibers. Which type?
One.
One, yes. Type 1 collagen fibers. Now the question is where in gross anatomy would you find fibrocartilage containing tough type 1 collagen fibers? Athletes know very well. Meniscus is in your knee. Meniscus in your TM joint. In fact, all menisci in synovial joints, wherever they might be. Not the anterior and posterior cruciate ligaments. You got that yet?
Yeah.
Not those. That's ligaments. But the meniscus in the knee. And the intervertebral discs, these ones I was challenging here a minute ago. The intervertebral discs are fibrocartilage. And where muscles attach to bone, where the muscle is powerful, where the tendon attached to bone, if you have a very powerful muscle at that point, then Mother Nature created fibrocartilage right at that insertion point to strengthen that attachment. So it's very critical stuff. It's just very hard and unfair to give you on a midterm lab exam. Oh, you can read that. Yeah. Oh, no, we're not going to take a break, and we're going to come back and start voting.
Yes. Precise angle
this ring, the fibers are going this way, type 1 collagen. The inner ring, fibers are going that way. The inner ring, fibers are going that way at a very precise angle. And when I first started teaching, I ran into a guy at the University of Michigan who taught biomechanics. And he took me into his office and just tore me to tears with all this math. You know, I can't balance my checkbook. He's rattling off all these angles, and he said, this is the angle here because it is the strongest angle to make that bone as strong as can be. The collagen fibers, which you couldn't see very well, are in different lamellae at different angles, and those angles are absolutely optimum for the strength of the bone. After all, collagen is stainless steel wire, sort of. Okay, so there's a piece of a compact bone here. The blood vessel runs through a canal. And there's the blood vessel there. It's a capillary-sized vessel. And what is the name of that canal that runs through?
Aversion.
Aversion canal.
Are the other rings broken
down? Yeah, boy, you're reading ahead. Yeah. Every day of our life, these rings get broken down as necessary, and remodeling is occurring continuously. And I think one of the reasons for that is that we need calcium for muscle contraction, we need calcium for blood clotting, we need calcium for nerve function, and here's our reservoir, so it's got to break down at a regular basis.
Some of the largest, maybe oldest rings get broken down, and then a new one, so it's basically just going to
If you look at a single osteon, the osteoblasts that are making the bone are here. And these osteocytes here represent old osteoblasts, just like chondroblasts, chondrocytes. So the osteoblasts hang around in the aversion canal, and they make new bone. Where do the osteoclasts hang out? In the aversion canal as well. And so we go through episodes where the bone is eroded from the inside ring, and then it stops, and then that regenerates again. Yeah. I think I have a slide later on that kind of helps with that a little bit. Yeah, that's a continuous process regulated by your parathyroid gland. Okay, let's start then. Components of bone. What percentage of bone of a bone is organic material? Well, it depends on which textbook. I've consulted many textbooks on this, and I guess my conclusion is the average is somewhere over, slightly over 50% of the bone is organic molecules, like proteins, carbohydrates, lipids, nucleic acids. Anything else in nature? Besides protein, lipid, carbohydrate, nucleic acid. That's it. Organic molecule. How much of bone is not organic? I'm not a whiz at math, but I can figure that one out. So collagen is organic. Protein. Proteoglycans are protein and carbohydrates. And glycoproteins are proteins and carbohydrates. And the cells themselves have nucleic acid in them. So all this organic material is gone from the bones and the skeletons hanging in the lab. It's real bone anyway. All this organic stuff is gone. There's plenty of minerals to maintain the shape of that bone. What percentage of bone is in organic substance? Well, we just said that. And the mineral, most of the inorganic substance, not all, but most of the inorganic substance is made up of little crystals of calcium phosphate. Some of these crystals are called hydroxyapatite crystals, and some of the calcium phosphate isn't crystalline at all. It's not a crystalline shape, it's just amorphous. Properties, what provides the strength of bone, do you think? Oh, that's a tricky question, actually.
The angle.
What is the strength of our human body due to? everywhere. Collagen fibers, stainless steel wires, everywhere. The dermis of our skin, our tendons. The collagen fibers in bone. What does calcium provide? What does calcium phosphate hydroxyapatite crystals provide for bone? Hardness, not strength. If you remove all the organic substance, it's still hard, but it's not strong anymore. Still pretty hard. Calcium and phosphates produce hardness, and the strength is collagen. What are the basic types of bone? Spongy bone and compact bone. Have you looked at that in lab and got a kind of a sense of the sponginess and the non-sponginess of the compact bone?
What about hyaline cartilage? I have to go to the open lab, I guess.
Matt. Grams and kilograms. Not pounds. Yes. So we're going to look at spongy and compact bone. Maybe now you already have read the textbook in order to work your way through lab, so you have a general idea of where to find spongy bone. If you had the femur in your hand, where would you look for spongy bone in that femur? At the end. And what's the end of the bone called? The epiphysis, and what's the shaft of the bone called?
Diaphysis.
Spongy bone more in the epiphysis, and compact bone more in the diaphysis. And here's near the epiphysis. And this was magnified not with a microscope, but with a hand magnifying lens. Well, if you pull out a bone out of the cabinet down the histo lab, there's one down there where you can see this with the naked eye. Looks just like this. This is rough here. There's only mineral left because it's real bone and all the organic material was digested away. So it's all hard stuff and you can prick your finger on that pretty easily. What does that remind you of in the ocean?
Coral.
Coral. Sure, coral. And here's compact bone. Any osteons over here? Any osteons there? An emphatic no. Where are the osteons? Here, the compact bone. There's no spongy bone here. This is compact bone on the shaft. So what you have in your slide collection is some examples of spongy bone and some examples of compact bone. Why do we have bone? Well, so we can stand erect or sit or support our body, you might say. Well, we have bones to protect our lungs and the heart. Ribs, for example. Skull bones to protect the brain. We wouldn't be able to move, obviously, without bones. We'd be kind of a cuddle of protoplasm, so to speak, a blob. We need joints. Hard to move without joints, too, you know. Just kind of waddle around a little bit. You could do it, but bone is necessary with the joints. And it's sometimes easy to forget that one of the main functions of bone is to provide a reservoir for calcium and phosphorus. Those of us that drink soda pop get plenty of phosphorus anyway, so I don't worry about that. But calcium. We need calcium. We don't need phosphorus for muscle contraction or nerve function or blood clotting. We need calcium for all kinds of important physiology. So my mother says drink milk for strong bones, right? You gotta drink milk for strong bones. She lied to me. What makes strong bones? Collagen. Calcium makes hard bone. Can't believe she lied to me. She made me drink milk besides. And I'm milk intolerant. Why do we have calcium in bone? Not for the bone's sake. have calcium in bone. So we have a reservoir for muscle contraction and nerve function and blood clotting. And the list is enormous of human physiological functions requiring calcium. And by the way, we have a storage of it in bone. And this calcium level in bone changes because we need calcium in the bloodstream. So we've got to get it out of bone once in a while so that calcium is circulating in the bloodstream to reach muscles, the heart, leg muscles, nerves for nerve function. And so we have a hormone that is responsible for seeing to it that we have enough calcium in the blood. And that hormone comes from our parathyroid glands, four little glands in the neck embedded in the thyroid. Why they call it parathyroid? It's right on the surface of the thyroid, right? Para meaning next to, on the surface of. You have four of those. You'll study their origin in embryology class. Fascinating origin of those. No, not this. However, the calcium release, osteoblasts have estrogen receptors on them. So bone cells have estrogen receptors. Parathyroid doesn't respond to estrogen.
Is that why
thyroid
works metabolic or pre-metabolic?
Yeah, the osteoblast, in menopause, one of the thoughts is that as estrogen levels drop, the osteoblasts aren't getting any signals, enough of the signals to make new bone. That's one possibility. Calcitonin, another hormone, is important in children and less important in you and I, adults. But it's a hormone. And one reason why we have to talk about it, well, you might have children in your practice too, though, but one reason we have to talk about it is because of tumors of the thyroid gland that secrete calcitonin. It's human. And some people have thyroid. By the way, this hormone is made in the thyroid gland. It's not the thyroid hormone we talk about, which is thyroxine, but it's the other hormone of the thyroid gland, and its role is in regulation of calcium levels in the blood. Now just imagine somebody that survived Hiroshima and Nagasaki and develop thyroid cancer of a special type, or somebody farming around the Chernobyl nuclear plant developing thyroid cancer of a special type. And many of those special types were secreting calcitonin. So now let's see what happens to those people when they have excess calcitonin in their bloodstream secreted by this thyroid tumor. Parathyroid hormone causes bone to release calcium into the bloodstream or store calcium. What do you think? The question is, parathyroid hormone, does it act to increase the amount of calcium in bone or to decrease the amount of calcium in bone?
Decrease.
Because the calcium is going into the bloodstream. Parathyroid hormone is important in maintaining adequate calcium in the blood. So what do you think calcitonin might do then?
Increases
bone calcium. These individuals with thyroid tumors had low calcium in the blood and lots of hard bone. Structure long bone from gross anatomy. We seem a little tentative or shy about these terms here. Diaphysis is the long shaft. It has periosteum around the outside. What tissue again is periosteum? What specific name tissue? Yes, irregular connective tissue. It's like perichondrium. Periosteum is not bone because it says it's around the bone. It doesn't say I am in the bone. It says I am peri-bone. Compact bone has osteons. You looked at the osteons carefully. In the center of the osteon, you'll find the avergent canal. What's in the avergent canal that's so important? Blood vessel. Maybe some nerves even. A loss been debated for years. The avergent canals in my femur run up and down. Which direction do the Volkmann's canals run?
Transverse.
And they're both pretty much the same thing because they both have blood vessels. Volkmann's canals are bigger and are running transversely, and the avergent canals running up and down. We have a term called interstitial bone, which you may have encountered in the atlas, you may have encountered in your reading. It's found in compact bone. And what is it? It's bone that's found in between osteons. In between adjacent osteons. And let's see on that first picture if we can find interstitial bone. There it is. Interstitial bone is this bone in between adjacent osteons. When you have a round cylinder, when you have multiple round cylinders, and you try to pack them together, there's space in between them. And that's called interstitial space. That's called interstitial bone in this case. And what that interstitial bone represents is old osteons that have been remodeled by eating away the old osteon. And so that interstitial bone is much older than the osteon bone, because they used to be osteons that are no longer osteons. Just some additional vocabulary here. One more term, Sharpie's fibers are fibers of the periosteum that go deep into compact bone. It's kind of a way that a periosteum remains attached in life. It remains firmly attached to the bone because of type 1 collagen fibers are directly like fish hooks. Periosteum is like hooked by fish hooks, Sharpie's fibers, into the bone. Epiphysis. Looks like a humerus, doesn't it? And the diaphysis. There's a little spongy bone in here. Not much. Most of the diaphysis is compact bone. A lot of spongy bone up here. Metaphysis is a fancy word for the transition point there. And we'll encounter metaphysis in pathology class. But what's the epiphyseal line represent here? That's the growth plate. Once, if you're 14 years of age, 12, 11, 10, what's the composition of the epiphysis?
Hyaline cartilage.
Not the last part. Hyaline cartilage only. And then what's this blue on the surface out here? Hyaline cartilage, called articular cartilage. So there's, in a young person, there's hyaline cartilage on the surface, making it very smooth and shiny. And there's hyaline cartilage here to grow by, that the bones can grow. If we look at a piece of compact bone in the diaphysis, we get this drawing like we saw in the very first slide. Volkmann's canal runs horizontally. Avergent canals run vertically. And this is running through an avergent. It says artery there. More like a capillary, not an artery. It's a really small blood vessel. And the osteum is facing the bone marrow. Periosteum is facing the muscle insertions, where the muscles are inserted on the exterior. You have the osteons, and there's interstitial lamellae of interstitial bone. This used to be an old osteon a long time ago. So there's the angle of the collagen fiber. This is compact bone. where the mineral has been removed. So all the hardness is gone. And we're looking at preserved and prepared organic material now. This is organic bone, compact bone. And we can see osteocytes deep within the osteons. There's an osteon there, one here. Here's a Volkmann's canal running the other direction. The Virgin canal is cut in cross-section. And so the osteons don't show up very well in bone that's prepared with organic material. It shows much better, and you notice that yourself, it shows up much better in what we call ground bone, which is all mineral. The osteons show up much nicer when we're looking only at the mineral. It doesn't show up quite as clearly and distinctly when we're looking at organic bone. Here's some periosteum up here. Two different types. We don't bother with distinguishing them. Each one of these is the Virgin canal belonging to a small osteon there, a small osteon here, a small one there, a big one there. There's interstitial bone in between. Compact bone on the diaphysis of a long bone begins life as spongy bone. It started out as spongy, and then the arteries became the capillaries of Virgin canals. And there is one bone in the collection where you're looking at spongy bone and you're asked to find Virgin canal. Well, that's confusing because spongy bone doesn't have Virgin canals. Only compact bone does. So that's a confusing statement. But the point is that slide represents spongy bone that is in the process of becoming compact. Those areas of blood vessels in it would have become eversion canals if we could have followed the process. Again, here is bone that is preserved and fixed containing organic material. So there's an osteocyte and its nucleus. An osteocyte and its nucleus. Here's an eversion canal with a little red blood cell in it. This is organic material. There's the osteon. In the eversion canal, we see a blood vessel. We might see osteoblasts. There, I don't see any good specimens in the lab, but the osteoblast and compact bone would be in there. What's the difference between an osteoblast and the osteocyte? Well, let me rephrase it. What's the difference between a chondrocyte and a chondroblast? And an osteocyte and an osteoblast? What's the difference? Osteoblasts are actively making the bone. We don't think osteocytes are making any bone. They're happy as larks living in their lacuna. And don't let anybody disturb them. However, they do help to maintain somehow or another, the vitality, and we don't know the answer to that, help to maintain the vitality of the bone. This is a stem cell. How do they know that? Your guess. That could just as well have been an osteoblast. That's a mesenchymal cell, a stem cell. So they labeled it osteoprogenitor cell, just to be fancy, stem cell. Osteoprogeny, osteoprogenitor cell. Well, you have both of these specimens in your slide collections. And what's the difference between this beautiful specimen here and this kind of blah, boring specimen over there? This one contains no mineral. And this one contains what? Only mineral, right? Ground bone, only mineral. Well, here, now this is decalcified bone, meaning it's organic, and so the microtome can cut bone as long as there's no gritty mineral in it. And so we can make thin slices of bone, like little loaves of bread slices, as long as we get rid of the mineral. And now the bone gets soft. It's still strong, but it's soft now. And we have cellular cytoplasm and nuclei, and the pink is eosinophilic, isn't it? Saint pink is collagen fibers. What's going on over here? How do we prepare? How do you think we prepare bone that is hard mineral that we can't cut it with a knife? What do you think we need to do to that bone to make it thin enough so we can pass light through it to see it through the oscillators on the microscope? We have to say it louder. We have to grind it. So what do we call bone that's grinded?
Ground.
With a diamond wheel that just grinds it thinner and thinner and thinner and thinner until you get light through it. It's ground bone made thin with a special tool. And now look how great the osteons look. We can't see the canaliculi here in the organic bone. But we can see the canaliculi nicely here, and you see what the canaliculi are doing? They're running from one osteocyte lacuna to the next. Is there any cells living in these black holes? Any cells in this specimen right here? Are there any cells living? Any dead cells in there? No, there's no cells in there, period. No cells, period. Why does it look black? Indeed. Good. Got one right.
Ooh, you should have shot back at you.
And also it looks black because of the diffraction of light. As light comes up, it's diffracted out of the line of fire, I was going to say. Okay, so we can see the lamellae, sort of. You can see the osteocyte lacunae black, and you see the canaliculi. Anything in the canaliculi in this specimen besides India ink? No, just no cells, nothing in there. What would be in there during life if we could see the canaliculi here? What would have been in that canaliculus in a living bone? A process of an osteocyte, yes. This osteocyte living in here, and this osteocyte living in here, they're kissing fingers. There's a long process running through the canaliculus, touching the osteocyte in the other lacuna. And what else I heard? I heard something else, too. There's nutrients flowing through the canaliculus, so that these osteocytes out here in the vicinity of Pluto gets a little sunlight, gets a little food out here, because the nutrients from this capillary can percolate through the canaliculi and reach the outer rooms, the outer lacuna. Spongy bone, compact bone. Did you all feel really comfortable with spongy bone? Feel really comfortable so when it shows up on the mock exam that the TAs put together for you? Feel comfortable before the midterm exam or the mock exam? Feel comfortable? Okay, good.
Sorry,
right. And here's the compact bone with the osteon. No osteon. This is like coral. Boy, you hit this edge here, and this is sharp as all get out. Very sharp. As all get out. My mother never swore, but she had all these great sayings. They don't come to me until I'm in the middle of something where they apply. I sit down. I'm going to write down all the things my mother said, you know? And my mind is a blank. So when I get in the class, I'll say, well, the osteocytes gave up the ghost. Oh, yeah, that's what my mother said. And I stayed at the party until the last dog was hung. I can't remember that dog. It's funny how that is.
Ways to get there too.
Exactly.